do you go?
When all that you see
are actors on your television singing off key.
What savvy, well-versed heroes can settle the
score?
Once more with TV.
Welcome, paralegals and Woods, L, to Once More with TV, a podcast celebrating TV musical episodes from the sublime to the subprime.
And definitively ranking them using every theater child's worst nightmare, math.
I'm your co-host, Liza Truschel, she, her, and I'm a Jane Krakowski enthusiast.
And I'm your co-host, Alex Kovnatsky, he, him, and I think Game of Thrones was always bad.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah, that's my spicy take.
Time.
This week we took a look at Ally McBeal, season 3, episode 21. This episode came out in 2000, May 22, 2000.
Wow.
Liza, what is your connection to Ally McBeal?
I thought until this episode started that Ally McBeal was about a high schooler.
Me too.
She was a lucky teen.
That's crazy. I also thought this. Not to cut off your thing, but I thought, I don't know why I got this in my head. I think I was thinking of Ally Beardsley, and that made me think of Kristen Appleby's. But I was literally picturing a Kristen Appleby's type character just navigating high school.
I think I might have gotten it like mixed up with my so-called life. I think like I might have conflated those two things, and I thought this was the Claire Danes show where she wears like a bucket hat with a sunflower. But like it took me a few minutes in to be like, oh, we're not going to go to high school, huh? Like, she's an adult. I was like, yeah, so this show is about Ally McBeal, a plucky young lawyer in New York City. And yeah, I just, wow, really thought this was going to be about high school, was absolutely thrown for a loop. And at no point did I feel like I could calm down. I felt like I was having an extended panic attack for this entire episode.
I think she might actually be in Boston, but I don't know. She literally could be anywhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of exact same. Obviously, I don't know anything about Ally McBeal either. And I purposefully didn't want to look anything up going into it. And I think that gave me the best version of this experience possible.
Something else that was weird from my experience was, okay, so this is available on Disney Plus in the US. It's not in the UK. In fact, it's not available anywhere to stream in the UK. So I had to watch a good old-fashioned pirated version of it.
So actually, Liza, it's not available on Disney Plus in the US either. So, correction to our previous episode it being on Disney Plus. Here's the thing. I did some digging. It used to be on Disney Plus and on Hulu, and it just got mysteriously wiped off the board, off of every streaming service. And I think it's because this show actually has a lot of music in it constantly that they cover. Vonda Shepard is the person who wrote the theme song of this show, and wildly she shows up in a bunch of episodes of the show at the end just singing a cover of a random song in like their bar or whatever, and is like playing a fictionalized version of herself. Like, she's literally just playing herself. It's so weird. But that's why the musical episode came about, is because they're like, we do this all the time. That's kind of our thing, is like just playing covers of songs. But I think they get in a bit of licensing trouble with that, because it took them a super long time to actually release a box DVD set, because they had to deal with the music licensing of just covering songs all the time.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, very appropriately lawyerish for this show.
Yeah, for it to get tied up in a legal matter is sort of fitting. So I had to watch a pirated version. I guess everybody did if they watched this, unless you had a DVD, if you had access to the DVD of Ally McBeal. But mine was... it had been flipped left, right. So all of the text was backward the whole time.
Like,
it added this layer of like uncanny that was honestly intolerable. I was really felt uncomfortable. I can't 100% blame the show for that, but it was not helping.
Yeah, that's very surreal. Let's actually just get into it. I'd love to read you this synopsis that I found for the show. There's a very good and well-written IMDb synopsis, but I found this one and I like it more.
Okay.
Here's the synopsis. Allie falls in love. Cage has a birthday. Nell regrets her actions against the firm. Music by Randy Newman.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that kind of covers it.
This episode is called Allie McBeal, the Musical Almost. And I think that's pretty appropriate as a title.
Yeah, that pretty much fits. It's almost a musical. It's not quite.
Yeah, it's not quite. I think the only original song is Search in My Soul, I think is what it's called, which is the theme song of the show that they all do together, which again was written by Vonda Shepard. But everything else is a cover, and it's like sometimes the weirdest version of a cover where they're actually playing the real song and then somebody starts singing a verse of the song instead of the actual original artist. It's bizarre to me.
It was really, I was very much trying to figure out what was happening in the moment and what was like being performed at, because it seems that they go to this bar, this like cabaret bar where their friends perform sometimes. And that seems to be, or Vonda Shepard, I guess, usually performs.
I guess.
And this week, our team of lawyers is getting up there to do their own music. And it was really hard to determine what of that was real and what of that was not. I could not figure out it. This whole thing felt like maybe it was a dream to me. Like,
yeah, fever dream seems right.
Yeah, at any point I expected Allie to like wake up. Like, that was crazy.
And it's
like
weird.
The first song we get is like an overlay that's sort of doing like almost a voiceover of like the emotions that are happening in a scene, but that character who is singing at the bar is not in that scene at all. It seems to be maybe she's at the bar midday singing this song while this thing seems to be happening. It was very odd to me.
And they even switch between like characters who start singing the song and then going to the karaoke bar version of somebody singing that same song to then another character who is experiencing the same emotions singing a different verse of the song. It is wild. It's incredibly hard to track, especially for us who don't know any of these characters or their emotional stakes at all.
Yeah, it was completely, completely baffling.
Yeah, I think overall this episode is just generally a hot mess. And we'll get into the nitty gritty of it at all. But I do think I was like surprised sometimes when they made, like, it was just a bunch of big swings and a lot of them were misses. And then a couple times I'm like, that's kind of a good choice. I kind of like that. But it was like whiplash. I really couldn't get a hold of anything that was happening.
By the time I figured out what was happening in a scene, we were leaving the scene. Yeah. And it was really frustrating. I also didn't know that Allie McBeal had such a stacked secondary cast.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously Calista Flockhart plays Allie McBeal. But, you know, we've got Lucy Liu running around. We have Portia de Rossi, Jane Krakowski.
Of course, Tonya Winner.
Who I'm obsessed with. Yeah. Starlight Express. Dude, they're building an arena in the UK right now to do a production of Starlight Express.
Why? No.
Yes.
Actually, I would see it. I'm not gonna lie. I would get a ticket for that.
Part of that like cocaine fueled 80s musical. I'm like, what if they were a train? It's the dumbest shit on earth. And I'm so excited. I will be the first person at the show. It opens in June and I'm looking at tickets. Like, I am so
incredible.
Anyway.
Incredible.
I since watching this, spoke to a friend, and apparently, like, other seasons of the show have like Robert Downey Jr. And James Marsden. Like, this is a stacked show.
Yeah. And speaking of those guests, too, with Jane Krakowski, I could just hear anytime she was in a group number, like the opening number, which is like them singing the theme song, I really just hear her the whole time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I do hear other people singing, but her voice is just so prominent and so loud.
It's a Gronkowski forward mix.
It is. Yes, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah. They do this weird thing too after the theme song where they're like laughing, like they're laughing in the recording studio as it's ending. And I don't think I hate that choice. It like gave this kind of like weird authentic feel to it. And I think for the rest of the show, I'm like, oh, okay, I shouldn't really be taking this so seriously. This is kind of out there. We're going to kind of just be all in on this joke that this is kind of weird what we're doing. And I think that maybe works, question mark. I don't know.
I don't know. There was a lot about like just not even like the music numbers, but like the musical and like sound cues that were like strangely cartoony in a show that's like about lawyers that I wasn't expecting. Like there's this really menacing stinger when her parents come in. I was like, what the fuck? Like I was trying to figure out also because I have nothing to compare this episode to. I was really struggling to figure out what, if anything, was normal to the show. because it was so strange. Like I just expected this show to be really straight-laced in a way it was absolutely not at all.
Yeah. And you want to know what's crazy about this? This was the season 3 finale. This was the finale episode.
What?
They ended a season with this. What, and not just any season. They ended season 3. They've had two full other seasons of build-up before this.
What on earth? That's so confusing.
It was really confusing too for me because
Nell comes back to the firm and then gets alcohol poisoning and we all treat it really fucking lightly.
Yeah. Oh, it's strange. It's strange. And there's like weird moments too where like, you know, Allie's like at dinner with her parents and her boyfriend and she just hears a second of I Will Survive in her head. And then that's it. And then we move on to another song.
I just thought there was a disco queen under the table. Yeah. Like, she says that, which means she heard it in, like, are we inside her head?
I think we're inside her head. I think that is what we're doing.
Okay. Fine. I could not relax and enjoy myself, which is what Randy Newman wanted me to do in the next song.
And that's an important thing too, right? Like when the waiter is singing this at Ally McBeal, is she imagining that or is that really what's happening?
Unclear. Could not. The rules were non-existent. There were no rules. I had no idea if she was like hallucinating. Again, like I thought she was like, we were going to reveal that she was dreaming because nothing made any sense.
Yeah. I have a sneaking suspicion that like we are inside Ally McBeal's head all the time in this show. Like kind of like a Zach Braff Scrubs kind of thing, except the lines are very fuzzy. It's not Zach Braff looking to the left and now we have his thought. It's just like, it's just going to happen when it happens and don't worry about it.
It was so strange. And then of course, like her like teen self or like her child self walks in. I don't know if that happens in other episodes. I was quite surprised.
And it all happens so fast. Like I Will Survive, the waiter singing, and then young Ally McBeal
that
showing up.
That is a minute and 30 seconds like tops.
Yeah.
It's tops 90 seconds. Okay. Like, I felt like, oh, I'm watching the episode where this character has a psychotic break. God.
I never thought I'd say this on this podcast. Too many songs. There's too many songs in this episode.
Too many. They're all like 3 seconds long. I mean, like, we're about to get to like the fat boys. What is this American ass Tom Hollander, man? Like this knockoff Tom Hollander singing a little song called Johnny the Fat Boy.
I really don't know. And he honestly, like, sorry, but he's not very good at singing. And this is his second song.
And it's like, it's the first song that's like from the heart too. Yeah. Like, this is like the first like earnest moment. And like for him to just be singing, like, also, wow, the 2000s early Oz were like obsessed with being fat would be really traumatic.
Yes,
like,
yes,
imagine
yes, yes.
being imagine fat if. And the trauma that that must leave on a person's soul to have been fat. Unreal. But like, yeah, so we like, and he just sits in his fucking office chair and sings it to us, and we just have to sit there and listen. And it's supposed to be like this big moment where he's opening up his soul, and I was like, what is going on?
I also don't really think I understood the point really of that scene. I think I was juggling too many things and not really paying attention to the words, but it was hard for me to grasp why he brought this story up in the first place.
Yeah, it's hard to grasp. I mean, I don't know that it makes a lot of sense. I guess the thing is, Nell, Portia de Rossi, used to date him. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Honestly, we should have known Portia de Rossi was a lesbian.
Yeah, come on.
The show is giving her a beard. This man is nothing. But so Portia de Rossi embarrassed him, I guess, in front of everyone in a previous episode. And now she's like leaving the firm because it was unprofessional. And I guess I think he's trying to say that he doesn't do well with like humiliation because as a child he was bullied, Johnny the fat boy.
Got it. Okay, that actually connects the dots well.
I think that is what is trying to do. It's a bit lost in the scene. And again, you're just watching a man sing a sad little song.
Like, I feel weird. Like the formula for this show is like, or for this episode at least, is like, let's sing 2 seconds of a song and then have a character tell another character that they're doing something incorrectly. And then the next 2 seconds of a song, cut to karaoke, some other character starts singing the next song, and then another character comes in, tells them they're doing something wrong, and the thing repeats.
I don't even think Jane Krakowski spoke.
She didn't. No. She says, oh, she can sing too, or something like that about the redhead, which, by the way, that redhead's name, who's like doing all of the like sexy hanky-panky song, her character's name is Hope Mercy, which I thought was ridiculous.
That's ludicrous. That's Alicia Witt, right? That's who that is?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. No, Jay Krakowski seems to have nothing to do in terms of the real show, but because she's our singer, we sort of just like bring her in to sing songs. Not against it, but it's not advancing anything.
Yeah.
Especially for her, like, I had no context for who she was besides just someone we know who's very good at singing.
She's a full-ass character on this show. Like, I don't even know her name.
Don't know if it was said at any point. Like, her songs are entirely to underscore scenes where other characters are supposed to be having emotional moments, but they're not really paying off either. Mm-hmm. So it just feels like we found a song that Jane Krakowski could sing, like, you can't keep a good man down or whatever.
Oh my God. That song was an emotional roller coaster for me. It starts with that guy telling the other guy that he's tone deaf when he's singing, which is wild to me because he's a better singer than the guy who said he's tone deaf. And then it cuts to that karaoke thing where Jane Krakowski's doing some Fosse chair choreo bit. And then it cuts back to those two white men dancing. And that was pretty funny. I liked that part.
That was like, honestly, I think I was most charmed by that 2 seconds, which is just these two white men dancing badly in a lawyer's office, because that like made sense to me. That felt honest.
Yes.
None of the rest of this episode felt honest.
We should also mention Ally McBeal's boyfriend. I think Ally McBeal's boyfriend's scenes kind of just get cut into by different musical numbers, but she has this British boyfriend who Ally McBeal's dad is in a competition with ?
Oh my God. Ally McBeal's dad is intolerable. I'm sure this is not like a good episode to try to meet him on, because this is like, there's this very gross sort of Freudian thing going on where like he is getting very territorial over his daughter now that there is like a man in her life and mm-hmm. he's being kind of a dick and like all of this stuff. And the whole episode, everybody's like, Ellie, you should just be nicer to your dad. Yeah.
It's like, so weird.
It's so weird. It's very like, it's very 2000s to me. And I guess to their credit, like, eventually Allie sort of makes her dad come to her a bit. Mm-hmm. It's like, you have to apologize for being a dick. And she mm-hmm. kind of like holds her ground on that. So I do want to give her that. But it was like, I just couldn't stand him. To me, he had like no redeeming quality.
Yeah, both of Allie's parents are awful. Any scene with them was deeply frustrating. And yeah, I do think, to your point, I think that is when Allie is most charming, is when she's like, no, I'm not going to back down to this, right? Like, I'm going to mm-hmm. tell you that you're being an ass. Like, when she tells her mom, like, you're in my office right now, I can use whatever tone I want. Like, I was like, yeah, that was pretty cool.
It was funny also for a show that seemed like to be so obsessed with like gender roles, especially yes. this episode, that they definitely have a gender neutral bathroom at this lawyer's office because it's where we have half of our conversations conservatively.
That's such a good point.
It's like, wow, interesting.
Yeah, there's this really weird gender moment where first of all, Allie's boyfriend keeps just saying making love all the time, which it was yeah. so cringe.
So weird.
But she's like, hey, you're a man. You're supposed to want to have sex with me. And he's kind of like, no, that's not how that works. And I was like, that's actually pretty refreshing. That's like, I'm glad they landed there. And then he's like, have you ever heard of The Music Man? And I was like, okay, I'm in.
It's his favorite musical. Whose favorite is The Music Man?
Listen, I will say one thing. I think The Music Man, like pound for pound, has some of the most bangers per capita that have still stood the test of time in a way. I think The Music Man is better than people give it credit for. But at the same time, wild that both of them love The Music Man and they both love Lyda Rose, like specifically. It's crazy to me.
Specifically, they love Lyda Rose. And yeah, okay, so are they in her apartment when that's happening? Because her dad just like walks.
No, Liza. He doesn't walk in. He is in the hallway and his yeah. face is in the mirror where they love to frame him just looking from the mirror.
So she like, I was so thrown by that because at first I assumed we're like at her apartment, although it's midday. I don't know. Maybe they have longer lunch hours because I have no idea what's going on. So they're at her apartment or so I think. And she was like, the thing is she was about to have sex with this dude. And then yeah. he was like, let's sing Lyda Rose. Like, so there was like a bit of a pivot. But like, does her dad just have a key and walk in unannounced? Because then you should not have sex in that apartment. Like, there were so many things about this where I could not get a grip on where we were or what was happening. But yeah, her dad, like the idea that her dad could have just as easily walked in on her fucking this man was really undercutting Lyda Rose for me. That was a complicated emotion to have.
That's especially funny that I'm just thinking Allie McBeal's boyfriend is now like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have sex right now. Maybe we should just play this song. You know, your yeah. dad is here.
I couldn't do this.
Oh, yeah. A lot of weird daddy energy in yeah. all of this. I did think the Lyda Rose scene was kind of cute, though. And I think they did the counterpart really well, which isn't easy. So, you know, hats off to them.
That's a hard song, yeah. Yeah.
And like both sets of, you know, the Allie McBeal and her boyfriend and Allie McBeal and her dad, both were good. Both didn't need to happen in this episode. Mm-hmm.
Also, just, you know, I don't love like replacing your dad with your boyfriend.
Why not, Liza? Why is that bad?
What about that bothers me? That's personal. There was so much like weird gender stuff in this too, like yeah. just the focus on like making Nell, Portia de Rossi, apologize when like he is being a dick to her in front of everyone in this office.
Absolutely.
Like, and it's up to her to apologize. It was just, first of all, this strikes me as a wildly unprofessional workplace.
Yes.
Like, insanely so. Like, even more so than, like, you know, even like a Grey's Anatomy or something. At least they're still doing their jobs. I didn't see it. Also took Portia de Rossi a crazy amount of time to pack up her desk. Like, she was really milking that.
Yeah. Okay,
she's there like most of the episode with a few little boxes, not seeming to be packing up anything.
It's very Paul Rudd in Wet Hot American Summer. Just like,
this. Like, it's just, oh my God, girl. It does not take multiple days.
Yeah. Ally McBeal, the show and the character care a lot about gender. No, a man is supposed to be like this. No, a woman's supposed to do this. It's very...
Like, sometimes they're trying to like undo some things. And so I want to give them credit for that. But most of the time, it's just so obsessed with gender, not like saying anything about it, just being obsessed with it.
Totally. And yeah, Ally McBeal, you know, does this thing that a lot of... like strong female characters of this era did, of just like generally hating other women, but you know, sometimes she comes back on it, so like it's weird. I don't know where they're trying to land with any of that stuff.
I didn't know where any of this was trying to land with anything. I felt so confused. I mean, like, we haven't even talked really about Randy Newman and his extreme presence. Like,
I do want to talk about this Randy Newman moment, because I think this episode started gaslighting me at this point, where a Randy Newman song, I mean, Randy Newman songs have been playing, but it's people singing Randy Newman songs. And then this one is actually Randy Newman singing the song. And I was like, okay, so this is just like background music. And then it like seamlessly transitions to a character singing the song instead of Randy Newman. And I think maybe I liked it. I don't know anymore. I thought it was really a weird choice. And I can't think of any other show that has ever done something like that. And I think I kind of liked it there. But I'm not sure.
Randy Newman is in
the episode. And then Randy Newman is in the episode. Yeah.
Like, that turnaround, I could never wrap my mind around what was happening in any given scene. The writing of the show felt very like frenetic and cocaine fueled to me.
Yes.
Like, I just didn't understand it. And then just like a use of a lot of the found music was Randy Newman songs. Mm-hmm. A lot of it.
I did. So Randy Newman appears like later than the song that I'm talking about, where his voice comes in.
One of the last things that happens.
I will say I did have just a moment of pure glee when I saw him.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's Randy Newman.
And it was like an epiphany moment of like, oh, this is amazing. But also, this makes so much more sense that we have so many songs in this episode. Because I was kind of going like, what is the deal here? Why is there so much Randy Newman? Just going like,
does our music supervisor just fucking love Randy Newman? Like, it's so odd.
I want to talk about the scene with Ally and her mom, because I think that was maybe the most frustrating scene I've ever seen. I need you to explain it, Liza, because you have a better way of unpacking dialogue than I do. What was Allie's mom's point that her only connection to Ally is Ally's dad? I don't understand
I think what she was saying was that Ally has always been closer with her dad than with her mom. And so sometimes her mom feels like they don't have much of an individual relationship, the two of them. Mm-hmm. Like, her mom is almost third wheeling her and her dad a lot of the time.
It's like, even grosser.
It's so gross. But yeah, it's just like, it's the idea that, Ally always got along with her dad. I guess he's also a lawyer. So maybe they had like that to bond over. Like, he kind of like mentored her or something like that. I'm obviously making a lot of extreme leaps here.
Yeah. But
it seems like what her mom was saying was that I'm worried that without your dad, like, our relationship couldn't stand on its own, Which is like, okay, put more work in.
Yeah, no, but that's what's so confusing. Okay, so that actually does clear it up a lot for me, because I really was just genuinely baffled by the statement of like, I'm not connected to you. I'm connected to your father who's connected to you. It's like, you're literally my mom. And Allie says that. She's like, what do you fucking mean? You're my mom. And then Allie's mom is like, okay, I gotta go. I don't get it.
Yeah, it just felt like this crazy... It felt crazy to me. The entire scene felt totally wild. I mean, it felt like even her mom is obsessed with the idea that, like, men are more important in Allie's life than other women. Like, she's like, your father is more important. I was like, why? Like, just be present. Like, this seems really fixable.
It's like, so weird.
It was so weird, dude. And we haven't even, I mean, we have to talk about this fucking, like, sex. You mentioned this sexy performance of like this guy he literally says, I want a little performance in order for like Alicia Witt's like apologizing to this man whose name I don't care to learn, if I'm honest. And then she does this, like, I couldn't do this. I fully dissociated. I left my body for like 3 minutes because I was so uncomfortable.
Yeah. I don't know if any of the writers in this writer's room have ever had sex before. I don't think they know what that is. It was bizarre. She sounded fine on a musical level. She sounded totally passable. That character again, her name is Hope Mercy. Just want to drive that point home.
I can't fucking believe that. That is so embarrassing.
Honestly, I don't know what more to say about that.
I just like, what was her relationship to the guy who asked her to give a little performance? Is that like her boss?
Honestly, like, probably. Probably.
That is a lawsuit. I would be calling HR the moment that all of this happened.
Yeah, it's surprising how much these lawyers don't know about what could be a lawsuit.
Very good point. Because, yeah, I think maybe that guy's with Lucy Liu, right? They have like an off again, on again, like.
Yeah. No, I think
I don't know. It was very confusing. I hated it so much. I couldn't pay any attention. And then, yeah, so like the final bits of this, though, everybody's now at the cabaret karaoke bar. Like, we're all here. We have that joke about like one actress, I guess, doesn't sing. So everybody's like, oh, is Blank singing? And they're like, oh, no, they turned her mic down, which is so rude. Like, you don't have to say that.
Yeah, it seems just, unnecessary.
It seems just mean. I mean, then we get to a point I didn't write down. Someone accuses Allie of being a monster for being mad at her dad for being an asshole, which I didn't care for.
It's crazy. There is another moment with Allie and her father that I kind of liked, in that I think this was in the gender inclusive bathroom, where she kind of says like, hey, it's great that you want me to follow my dreams, even though it didn't work out for you, even though you weren't able to follow your dreams. But like, do you think maybe you're trying to sabotage my dreams a little bit here because you couldn't get your dreams? And I was like, that's actually kind of a good little clap back and thoughtful little bit of insight there. And it kind of shuts him up, and he like doesn't know what to say, so he just looks in the mirror again.
Oh my god, this man just stares into mirrors. It seems to be most of what he does.
But I thought that was kind of nice. This show is so much whiplash. I really don't know how I feel about it 90% of the time.
Well, then we get to, like, he says he, like, wrote a song for her, right? Like, yes. In order to apologize. And so then we, you know, she makes him sing it at the piano in her apartment. When did we get there? I'm not sure.
Well, he was already in the apartment. He does have keys to this place.
That's not okay.
It's not okay. 30. In the dark, in a chair, just waiting for
him. Not okay. First, which is okay.
Anyway. It's so creepy.
So good. But like, so then you know, she's like, well, sing it for me, like sing the song. And he's like, I don't remember it. I'm like, you fucking wrote it. So he's like, you absolute dweeb.
It's a Randy Newman origin story.
And then he sings a little song where he just calls her emotional.
Yes. There is a heinous line in that too, where I think the line is she turns on easy is a phrase he uses to describe his daughter.
Heinous. I think, yeah, like he's obviously trying to get at like what he can't understand about Allie is that she like wears her emotions on her sleeve in a way that he is really repressed. So
yeah,
that's where he's supposed to be coming from. What the song is, is him calling his daughter emotional when he's supposed to be apologizing to her for not understanding her. And then saying things like, you know, he just means that she's like a quick trigger to have an emotion. But what he's saying is that she turns on easily.
Yeah, no, you can't say that.
You can't say, fucking say that.
You can't say
it
that.
Was so nothing about this song. It was like, especially if we're doing like a season finale, like this is supposed to give me the warm fuzzies, make me believe that Allie and her dad are going to be okay, that this relationship is important. And I was like, get this man out of your apartment.
It's also wild that the episode just ends right after that song, because like then you're like, oh, season three is done. Things concluded, right? Like we wrapped things up. We set up cliffhangers for the next season. I don't know.
The thing we mentioned is that like Nell, like Portia de Rossi, they do let her back into the firm. Like eventually she apologizes. She's contrite about whatever it is she did. Mm-hmm. And she gets back into the firm and then she gets crazy drunk and like passes out and like bangs her head on the table on the way down. And we all laugh that off in a way that was really unsettling to watch.
She's like fully passed out. Yeah, it's so weird.
Nobody shows even a hint of concern.
Yeah.
I was like, this is bad.
On the Real Emotional Girl song too, the mix was pretty bad. Like you can barely hear his voice over the piano, which I think was a choice because his voice being kind of like low and muddled is kind of nice aesthetically for like an older man. Like it fits the character in a way, but I couldn't hear most of what he was saying. And also, I don't think he was singing most of the notes. It was almost like speak singing.
It was mostly talk singing. Yeah. Yeah. It kind of felt like the actor didn't learn it. I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
But there was part of me that was like, are you just fudging your way through this? Like, are you carrots and peas?
Yeah. It's almost like the actor made the choice of like, oh, he's trying to remember what it is, so he's like muddling through it, but he didn't execute it like that. It didn't seem like that at all. It just seemed like he was mumbling
mumbled. Yeah, it was mumbled.
Maybe he invented mumble rap. Was it him?
Let's not give white men credit for things.
How was the episode?
We have to score it. We have to score it.
All right, Liza. This might be one of the most interesting and simultaneously inconsequential scorings we've ever done, because I don't know what I'm going to give for any of these scores, but I'm pretty sure they're going to be low.
I'm pretty sure too, dude, because we have to start with general vibe. Oh, and for me, it was bad. I had a bad time. I did not think this would happen at all in the course of making this show, but I had an actively stressful time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a good time for the wrong reasons, right? I did have fun being baffled and like, why would they make that choice? I like need to know more about this. But it's bad. It's not good. Like a 2, a 3, something like that.
I think, yeah, let's give it a 2.5. I had a bad time. I felt like I was losing my fucking mind.
Listen, it hasn't aged well. It's definitely problematic in many parts. It's not a good episode of TV, let alone a season finale. Yeah.
And yeah, I straight up just was not enjoying myself. I was a ball of, like, my blood pressure raised during this episode significantly. Oh, God. Okay. Music.
Music. Yeah, this one's interesting to me because obviously it's almost entirely found music, but we do have the author of all of these songs there, supposedly helping with the arrangements a little bit too. And there were some nice harmonies at moments. You know, they did do something different with these songs. It just was really short and way too many.
Way too many. There was no time, like, to appreciate the music, because by the time it started, it was over.
Yeah.
Like, by the time I wrote down what the title of the song was done. Like,
yeah,
I have very little information on this.
And I guess I was going to say, you know, I guess this kind of seeps more into lyrics, but the thing with found music is that you do want it to be appropriate for your character. And at times it mostly was, but at times it really kind of felt like, why did you choose this song? But I don't know. All that to say, I kind of feel a 4. I think it's good-ish for the most part, but not great.
Yeah, it's good-ish. It's not great. It's found. It's not original. Like, I don't. Yeah, I think a 4 is completely fair. And then, yeah, so lyrics. I mean, really, when you're talking about found music, this is, does it match the tone and characters of the show? Hard to say, because I could not determine the characters or the tone of the show.
So maybe it's very incredibly appropriate, because we didn't learn
might
anything.
Be. It might have been fucking 10 out of 10. I have no idea. I was so confused.
I'm tempted to give it the same score.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, I do think there are moments when it seemed to line up, but there were more. Again, I mean, we talked about how literally, like, we have whole characters, Jane Krakowski, who sing songs that have nothing to do with them, explicitly only have things to do with other people, but Jane Krakowski can sing and they can't. Like, this is not, they didn't feel particularly suited to the moment. All right. Dancing.
There was a bit of dancing. It pretty much maybe only happened on Can't Keep a Good Man Down, where we have Jane Krakowski doing the Fosse thing. We have Ally McBeal and her boyfriend doing, like, a couple, like, spins and cute little couples dancing. And then we have the white men dancing, which was great.
Great. We loved that.
Yeah.
White men are good for something.
Truly, truly no notes on that. That was perfect. I wish maybe there was a tiny bit more, actually. That's my only note.
Yeah. No, I didn't hate the dancing that was in this. I thought the dancing that was in this was fine and felt appropriate. I do wish other songs had utilized that. I think like there might be a little in, like, various karaoke bar scenes, but that's mostly sort of like leaning with a microphone stand style choreo. It's more blocked movement. So yeah, what was there was fine, but it really was not much. I mean, that song, for all that it was a song, was, again, like, we're not talking more than 100 seconds.
Yes.
Like, these are so short.
And I honestly, I didn't really love the Jane Krakowski chair choreo.
No, I don't think it's...
It didn't make sense to me. I was like, why is this happening right now?
I couldn't decide if she was trying to do Fosse or Smooth Criminal.
Well, they're like, both kind of the same, right? Like, Michael Jackson got a lot of his inspiration from Fosse.
That's true.
So, yeah, but it's still weird.
Yeah.
I think maybe
I call,
like,
it fedora choreography.
Fedoriography? Wow.
Fedoriography.
I don't know. 5, 6? I think it's...
Yeah, let's give it a 5.
Mostly positive, yeah.
I'm feeling a 5, yeah. I'm feeling it's very middle. Okay, performance. This is like vocal and acting performance together. I don't know. What are you thinking?
I think it's decent. I think we have a couple of bad singers who don't... The nice thing about these songs being short is that my time isn't filled with hearing them sing poorly, right? Mm-hmm. We don't try to make anybody sound especially amazing, which is kind of nice in a way, right? Like, we're not auto-tuning things. We're letting these characters sound like who the actors sound like. And Jane Krakowski is very good.
Yeah, so, we're almost a little mean about not auto-tuning in that we then criticize our actors for singing badly, which I felt was kind of like, I actually enjoy the choice not to auto-tune in general. I think you and I talk a lot about how if your character, especially in a world like this, they're lawyers. Like, why would they all be able to sing? It's okay not to be able to sing as long as you commit. But then I think to comment on how they're bad at singing was rude. I just like it kind of gave me a bad feeling, if I'm honest.
Yeah. But I don't know if that should count against them in performance, right? Like, no, that's a writing problem.
It doesn't. That's a writing issue. And, you know, maybe it's like also who's to say, like, it might have just been, you know, the character, especially who like tells the other white man that he can't sing, tells knockoff Tom and Hollander that he can't sing. Mm. I mean, maybe it would have been dishonest for that character not to say something. Like, I'll give them that credit too. Like, maybe I'm just like coming into it feeling a little sensitive, but yeah, and I think overall the performance was fine. Again, there was that mumbling bit where that just felt like a non-committal. And that was what I didn't like about it. I don't mind if you're going to miss the notes as long as you're committing.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes that felt like a bit of a non-committal, which is a knock on that performance specifically.
Mm-hmm. And it's worth saying, too, that they did take their strongest singers and have them sing all of those weird, you know, cut back to the karaoke part of it. Jane Krakowski and Lisa Nicole Carson, shout out her, because she was also very good too. And I don't think she has any like theater experience or anything like that. But yeah, I think generally the vocal performances were good. I think acting performance is pretty hard for me to judge because I'm like, what is anybody's motivation in any of these scenes?
I did not know what the bar was. Yeah, well, I mean, not the bar, like the test you take to be a lawyer. Sorry, I should use a different turn of phrase. But I didn't know what the normal tone of the show was. Yeah. So I couldn't determine, like, because it is a bit like broad and scenes tend to be like quite, we really talk about our innermost feelings a lot. And I didn't know if that was like specific to this episode or not. But I do think with what they're given, I think a lot of the actors were turning in good performances.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a really, really great point. With the writing as kind of bad as it is, I do kind of want to give these actors the benefit of the doubt that they did quite good work with the script.
A few of them had genuinely funny moments or genuinely like good line deliveries on what are objectively some pretty difficult lines to deliver.
Yeah, totally. Maybe an 8?
Yeah,
is this one good?
This is gonna, be nice about that. Then, I mean, next is writing.
Yeah, which is not good. Yes, yeah. I don't think this is good at all. I think this is maybe the worst thing about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a bad time with everything about this. The pacing and the structure were unbelievable. Made no sense. Again, we said like dialogue was often really ham-handed, which is why we're giving actors credit for what was happening. It felt like this entire episode was written again on just a mountain of cocaine.
Yeah.
This felt really cocaine fueled in a way that I hadn't seen on the rest of these episodes.
I hate to say it, Liza. Yeah. I think this might be our first one.
Dude, I was going to say, I think I agree with you because we gave Riverdale a 2, but I liked Riverdale. That's why I got that extra point, was it was bad in a fun way. And this was bad in a bad way.
Yeah, because I was even trying to do like the calculus of, well, there were some moments where they said this kind of thing that made, you know, like was kind of a good point for Ally McBeal kind of talking back to her parents. Like I liked individual moments, but they all get subtracted by anything between Allie and her dad. It's so gross and bad, and we can't have it here.
They do not make up any, like, they, for all that they are trying to make individual points, they give up so much ground in every other moment that it doesn't even begin to even out.
Yes.
It still comes across as weird and misogynist. And I'm sorry. And like, I think that happens a lot with, again, like strong female characters of this era, is we kind of like, we also have to make them these like paragons of idealism, but everyone around them has to be awful. And I think maybe not for the entirety of the show. We're not commenting on the entirety of the show of Ally McBeal. We are talking about this one episode. And I think this one episode does not do her any credit. I think she has individual moments. Everybody else seems to suck so aggressively.
Yeah. But then on top of all of that, the writing's just bad, right? Yeah, like the episode didn't make sense.
It made no sense. We had no idea what was happening or where we were or why at any given time. that's a solid one. Wow.
Direction.
For me, part of this direction score is, I'm going to try to divorce it from the writing score as much as I can, but they do, to a degree, always go hand in hand. But for me, part of the feeling of disorientation came from this directing. It was very, again, hard to determine like what the karaoke bar was. Was it a Greek chorus that's singing all of our innermost thoughts? Like at first I was like, cool, it's a Greek chorus, and then no, we are there, and then no, we're not there. And also, you know, I think part of that was just there are times when like there seemed to be a really nice number happening and I don't get to fucking watch it. I'm like watching people talk, and that was really annoying.
Yeah, and there's literally moments where people are singing and I have no idea who's singing because we're focusing on someone else entirely, and we never end up cutting to the person who was singing in the first place. It's completely lost. I don't know if I love or hate when they had like kind of the three different people overlaid in different places, like an 80s movie.
I couldn't decide whether I loved or hated that either. I mean, I did laugh.
It's like, am I laughing with it or at it? Who knows?
I couldn't tell. I felt joy. Don't know where it came from. Was it Schadenfreude? Don't know.
Yeah, I want to give it like a 4 or 5. I think it's middle of the road, but closer to bad for me.
Yeah, for me, it's a 4.
Yeah.
Like, it's not it's not horrible, but it's really not helping at any point. I don't think it ever, you never get grounded.
No.
And I think that is mostly on the writing, but I think the directing could have helped.
Yeah.
And it didn't. All right. Commitment. How do they commit? I mean, we did do 100 songs. But we don't stay on the songs while things are happening. Things continue to happen during songs.
Here's what I'll say. It didn't commit to the conventional musical TV episode that we have come to know and love and rank and rate. But it did commit so hard to whatever Ally McBeal's version of a musical episode was. Like, it just did it, and it did not hold back. And I think that should factor into this to some degree.
To the point where we almost wish they had. Yeah. We wished every idea hadn't made it to the screen because there were too many ideas.
I'm really, this is the hardest one for me. I really don't know. I could give it a 2. I could give it an 8. Like, I really don't know.
Yeah. Wow. They don't commit to the musical as we know it. You're absolutely right. Right. Like, we don't have people singing because they can't talk anymore and the truth can only be told through song. That is not what fucking happens here.
Yeah.
They seem to try to be incorporating the world of the show, which involves this karaoke bar, into, they try to make that work. It makes it more confusing in the end, but kind of like we said at the top of the show, this is called the musical almost.
Yes, right. And I think they're aware of this.
I think they're really aware that there was no way that this show was going to do one of those kinds of episodes. And for what it's worth, I think they are trying. They're taking swings.
Yes.
Most are misses.
Yes.
But they're taking them. So I kind of do want to be more on the high end on this one, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think it helps to know that most of their episodes do end in a bar where Vonda Shepard is singing a cover of a song. So I feel like in the Ally McBeal cinematic universe, like this is the musical episode that makes sense.
Obviously, yeah,
the MCU, of course. The first MCU.
That's why Disney won't let it on their platform. By
That's
the way,
it.
They're worried.
The competition. A 7?
I'm feeling a 7.5 or an 8, honestly.
Okay, let's do an 8. I said it before, it could be a 2 or an 8, and it is going to be an 8.
Let's give it credit where credit's due, and I think that might be where the credit is. Okay, so the stakes. Is this a game changer for the show? Where are the stakes of the characters? This is a finale. I mean, we normally... this is technically a finale. We do normally reward shows for making an important episode your musical episode.
Great point.
Do I think anything happens? That's a different question.
I mean, the stakes are Ally is not getting in a relationship with her father and getting a relationship with this British man instead. And Nell is coming back.
Rossi is coming back to the firm. That feels like important.
Probably, yeah.
Although I will say, since she never left her office, I mean, it didn't feel that big.
Yeah.
But again, maybe it was big throughout that seemed like they were dealing with a lot of stuff that had happened. I don't know if that's a season long arc or that was last episode. It's hard to tell.
It's hard to tell. I think it's the stakes are more present than they are not present. So I think it's above a 5, but I don't know how much more above a 5. And of course, it gets hurt by the fact that we don't really know the show that well. So we don't know the stakes are relative to the rest of the show. So I'm inclined to kind of give this a 7 I think a 7 makes sense in my head.
I think a 7 makes sense. Yeah. Let's give it the benefit of the doubt on that. Let's give it a 7. Okay. Personal ranking, as always. You and I will have our own numbers. And we will average this number. I need a moment.
I have to divorce.
I need to center myself. I have to go do yoga.
I have to divorce the experience of watching this episode with the experience of talking about this episode. Because I've had a lot of fun today. But I don't think I had a lot of fun.
The episode, I had a very bad time.
Okay, I'm ready.
I think I have a number.
Okay.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 6. 2.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That seems right. That seems right.
6. That's a 4.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
All right. So that gives Ally McBeal, the musical, almost a overall score of 47.5, putting it in dead last. Sub 50, our first sub 50 score.
Yeah, that hurts. I think it's right, though. I think this is the first one where you and I did not have a good time.
I actually think it scored kind of high.
I think we might have been too nice. Next week, we'll have some real competition because we'll see you once more with season 4, episode 13 of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, entitled The Night Man Cometh.
You can find this episode on Hulu.
Thank you, as always, to Olivia Berslavsky, our angelic audio architect, and to Sakana Powell, our magnificent marketing maven.
If you like this show, please be sure to rate and review us. If you don't, keep it to yourself. You can find us on Instagram at Once More With TV or contact us using the information in the show notes.
And
scene.